This is Conway, receiving clerk for the Dead Letter Office of Ohio, processing the National Dead Mail Backlog. We here at the DLO are no strangers to odd parcels and unusual letters, and these two here are certainly unusual. The following audio recording will serve as an internal memo strictly for archival purposes and should be considered confidential. Need I remind anyone, public release of this or any confidential material from the DLO is a felony. Some names and places have been censored for the protection of the public. Dead Letter 11501, postmarked October 19th, 2009. This piece of mail was flagged by a carrier and sent to our Dead Letter office. The letter has been subsequently opened and read per the state's revised code. The letter reads as follows. Dear Terry at Realty, we're a small college town, so there will be parties. I grew up here, I get it, I lived it myself. Sometimes the people living above you are loud and obnoxious, not much to be done about that. For the tenant above me, it seems that every single night is a blowout. Most lights on our block go dim a few hours after sunset, of course other than the orange halos of the streetlights and the blue streams of TVs filtering through blinds. One night I'm watching reruns of Frasier or Jeopardy or whatever, the windows open to let the cool fall air in, but I can't hear a damn thing over the commotion upstairs. Pounding music seeps through the ceiling like a burst pipe. I'd almost rather have a water leak because maybe you do something about it for once. I try earplugs, I try the pillow over the head, I try it all. Eventually, sunlight starts to creep through the window, and when the sun does come up, the music just stops. And then I have to go to work, exhausted and frustrated. One brisk evening, as splashes of red sunset coat our building, I slip a small note under his door, something like, "Please keep it down after 10 p.m., some of us do work early." Problem solved, I hope. But as the last rays of daylight faded and my grilled cheese is fully melted, the damn music starts again. Some kind of dance music, uncomfortably loud, constantly thrumming like a wicked heartbeat. That night, I'm looking up at the ceiling, just seething over the sky. It's past 12, and the music still bleats, a single voice interwoven throughout. So I get up, march out to the hallway, and stomp up the narrow stairs. I knock heavily on his door in three quick successions. The door opens just a crack as bright, multicolored light and hammering drums buzz through the frame. "Hey, my dude, what is the deal?" is all he has to say for himself. I'm squinting against the harsh lighting now as my eyes struggle to adjust. He looks like he's in his late 30s, a bit haggard, wearing neon shutter shades and a few days of stubble. "Did you get my note?"
"What?"
He leans in to hear me over the commotion. I clear my throat and ask again, louder this time, about the note. I don't want to fight, I just want to sleep.
"Note? No, my dude, there are no notes here."
He laughs to himself, but his voice is shaky. Eventually, my eyes get used to the tacky backlight, and I can see a bit between the slats of his glasses. His eyes are huge, bloodshot, always moving. My gaze trails to the wrinkles creasing around his mouth and eyes. Scruffy, uneven hair held in place by a faded headband, slick with sweat and grease. The tip of a worn vape pen sticks out of the pocket of his baby blue polo shirt, and the man doesn't blink. He doesn't blink the entire conversation. "Well, could you keep it down at night, at least on weekends? I have to work."
"No can do, my dude. Party all day to keep the darkness away, know what I mean? Keep it from clawing its way inside."
I can't tell if he's joking or sick, but his red, staring eyes keep darting behind me to the shadowed stairwell. "You can do whatever makes you happy during the day. That's not my problem. It's the nights that I take issue with." I look past him and into his apartment, trying to make out any shapes in the room. I see a lot of lights, but no other people. If this was a party, it was a pretty bleak one.
"This ain't just for me, bruh. Gotta keep rocking all night to keep the dark—"
he starts, or something to that effect, as he wipes moisture from his upper lip and chin. It's chilly in the building, but he's glistening with beads of prickling sweat. I tell him I don't have time for this, and that if he doesn't knock it off, I'm calling the landlord. He says something about he's been here a while and no one else has complained, but I turn as he trails off and rub my temples, go back downstairs, and begin writing you this email. I I usually work in the morning, but that day a coworker had gotten sick and I needed to cover her class. I didn't finish grading until well into the night and then stopped for dinner. So when I got home around 11:30, of course, the one-man party upstairs was still going strong. On my way in, I passed by our outdoor breaker box and an idea crossed my mind. It may not have been my proudest moment, but I was at my limit. I popped open the breaker cover and switched off the upstairs power. The light from his room disappeared, and the music, finally, thankfully, ceased. All was quiet in our building, all dark. I went inside and sat on the edge of my bed, relishing the silence and admittedly hoping to hear at least a grumble or complaint after what he'd put me through. I assumed he'd figure it out eventually and check the breaker. If he's got that much lighting and music and who knows what else going all the time, it was bound to trip someday. But instead, I heard a wailing, a despairing, guttural sound coming from upstairs. I could only make out a few words between the shrieks, some terrified gibberings about the light going out and the dark going in, going to him. It dawned on me that there could be some kind of medical equipment in there, some life support or insulin in the fridge, and I sure as hell wasn't about to be responsible for accidentally killing an aging frat bro by shutting it down. I was slipping on my shoes when I heard a heavy thud from above, which seemed to end the raving. Then a long, drawn-out scratching along the floor, like the sound of dragging heavy furniture across hardwood. I'll admit that gave me pause, but I left my apartment and stepped warily up the narrow stairs, straining to hear more. There were marks across the concrete floor and up the wooden stairs below my feet. Long slashes and scuffs leading from his room, down the stairwell, and toward the vacant apartment below. You may want to check out the floor in his room, too. This is no fault of my own, so you can't take it out of my deposit. His door was still partially open, and I could see a faint green glow from beyond the frame. I snuck closer, following the marks, and peering in through the gap in the doorway. It was a complete mess. Hundreds of melted candles littered the room, dripping wax, frozen in strands and pools on the tables, rugs, and even right onto the 20 or so lighters and countless burned matches scattered around the floor. Towers of cassette tapes and CDs leaned precariously in the corner, while boomboxes and speakers were nested in coiled extension cords and power strips that snaked along the ground. Tall, thin, halogen lamps were plugged in at nearly every outlet and aimed at the center of the room, casting eerie shadows along the floor. The lights themselves were off, but I could still feel the heat radiating from the bulbs. It was hot, stifling even, on this chilly evening. Strings of unlit Christmas lights webbed across the walls in meandering patterns like reaching ivy. Old portable televisions faintly hissed with static from the bedroom. I had started to regret flipping the breaker, but I needed to convince myself he was unharmed, so I inched my way farther in. The stench of sweaty shirts overflowing from laundry baskets and the smell of overheated electronics filled the muggy room. Whoever this person was, he seemed desperate to avoid any silence, any ounce of darkness. I trailed the gashes in the floor to the source of the green light. In the bathroom, a huge pile of bent old glow sticks, several hundred at least, filled the bathtub to the brim. Their glow had mostly run out, but a dim, sick green pall still clung to the basin from the few that remained active. The marks ended here, next to the tub, or maybe they began here. Either way, the man was gone, the only trace of him left in the sty he lived in being a crumpled note by the tub. Finding no medical instruments or any evidence of injury, I left, closing his door on my way out. I was tired, confused, but generally just overjoyed that it was finally quiet, so I went to bed. That was 2 days ago, and of course a new problem has arisen. Something reeks in the building, probably some food this man left behind in his fridge that's gone rancid. There's the occasional scratching sound downstairs. It is vacant down there, right? You told me on the phone when I moved in not to worry about the basement apartment since nobody lived there,
Perhaps some raccoons took up residence. Regardless, they are also not my problem, and the noises downstairs are getting louder. I tried sending you another email about all of this, but it bounced back, saying the address was invalid. I know the rent is cheap, so I shouldn't complain, but you really ought to update the email address you give to tenants. I've been advised that I should hold my rent in escrow until the problem is solved. I do have some rights, you know, squatter's rights and all that. Now, I'm writing all of this by hand, along with the contents of the first email and the man's note, while fruitlessly trying to ignore the scratching outside my door. Yours, William. Per the policies of the DLO, we have looked into the recipient's address. The realty company was bought out around this time by the Greenwoods and shuttered its old office. We could find no current address for the sender, and the address it was sent from now appears vacant. The Dead Letter Office has verified this letter, DL-11501, as undeliverable, and the letter, along with this note, will be safely archived in our vault. Dead Letter 08602, postmarked December 29th, 1999, was flagged by a carrier and sent to the Dead Letter's office for verification and processing. The letter reads as follows.
Two has b- You have to take this toy back. Kmart will not let us return it on account it's been opened and is technically functional. Our kids have been going nuts for this Furby thing. Seen it all over them commercials, and we waited in line for hours just to get one. First thing, when we get it home, the dog growls at it and hid under our bed. Then, the thing would not stop talking, just jib-jabbering away, and that fake Furby words all night. Speaking of Furby, this thing don't got fur. It's got hair, and lots of it. Kids told me it learned some swears, bad ones too. So I took the batteries out, you know, to reset it, hoping it would resolve itself. I got some new double A's in there, but it just stood, blinking and moving its little beak nonstop with no talking at all. Well, we sat there for a minute just to see what happened. The kids asked me if I heard what it was saying, but I didn't hear nothing other than the little parts inside whirring about. Popped the batteries out, put the hairy thing in the closet, thinking that would settle it. But wouldn't you know it, next day, my wife swore she found it on the windowsill, looking out the window at the poor dog. My youngest says it sneaks out sometimes. Says it sways back and forth, sings to him in that made-up language. The older one told me it sat on top of him in his sleep, wouldn't let him move for hours. Said it stared him in the eye and whispered things only God should know. Well, sir, whether I believe all that or not, my kids have certainly had enough, so I took it to Kmart. They said they won't take it back as long as it works and I don't got the receipt. So here it is, not fishing for a refund, not fishing for a lawsuit or nothing. I just want it gone. Send it to the dump. Send it to the FBI. Hell, send it straight to hell. For all I care, I just want it to stop scaring my sons.
This letter was found stuffed in an old P.O. box years after its postmark, and was subsequently sent to the nearest of the three remaining Dead Letter offices, which is ours. The accompanying package could not be found. Per the ORC, the Dead Letter's office has verified this mail, DL08602, as unfit for delivery, and the letter will be securely stored in our vault. For the Dead Letter office of Ohio, this is Conway, signing off.